The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
This weekend marks 10 years since the National Children's Hospital was granted planning permission. And as you know, not a single child patient has yet been treated there, and it could well be another year before that happens. Why is it seemingly impossible to get big infrastructure projects done efficiently in this country, and how do other countries manage it? Maeve Jennings was head of development at Temple Bar Properties and now works on infrastructure projects across France and beyond. And she joins us now on the phone from Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia. So it's good morning to you and good afternoon to Tbilisi, Maeve.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, let's talk about this project. First of all, 10 years from planning to not being open, but it should be opened within the next 12 months. Is that terribly unusual when you look at various infrastructure projects across Europe?
To be honest, given the 10 years that we've had, it's not that unusual. The often big projects, because the nature of their complexity and especially if they're very specialized, like a children's hospital, you can have overruns. I don't think we're especially unique in that regard.
At the same time, 10 years and still counting, for a hospital that's only 380 beds, 22 theatres, there'll be 1,000 parking spaces, there'll be 5,000 staff. 10 years is a long time for those children to wait. They're no longer children, indeed, many of them.
Yeah, no, that's true. When it comes to an urgent project, if the children's hospital is indeed urgent, and I guess it is at this stage, then 10 years is a long time. A lot of the preparation for a project should happen such that the actual delivery of it happens a bit quicker than that. Yeah, for sure.
So there is a better way. Where do you see that better way in action?
Well, I guess across the European Union, where countries have been building big projects for the last 20, 30 years without pause, they have developed a certain knack for it, I suppose. Ireland took a bit of a pause, maybe, would it be fair to say, after the Port Tunnel. There have been some extensions to Lewis lines, but in terms of flexing our infrastructure muscles, we have we are starting to do that again now. And the Children's Hospital was the main project that spanned that period where there wasn't a lot of other big infrastructure projects happening. So, you know, practice makes perfect. And a lot of our European neighbours and friends have slightly different methods to delivering big projects. France, being where I'm based most of the time, has a variety of different methods of delivering. In the healthcare sector, they have an outfit called ANAP, who have all the skills for capital works and capital development and are available for hospitals to draw on those skills when they're preparing their scope and their procurement process. I think in the UK, they have an infrastructure project authority, which helps entities whose speciality is perhaps operating hospitals rather than building them. So it can bring those skills to bear. They've probably learned those lessons, or they've learned to put that kind of structure in place, because at some time in their past, they might not have delivered as efficiently as they hoped to, and they learned from those lessons, something I think Ireland is doing now with the Children's Hospital.
Looking at a publication from the Said Business School in Oxford, they maintain, looking at thousands of infrastructural projects across Europe, that a lack of client-side ability is at the heart of many of the failures.
And if your role is to deliver education or healthcare or electricity, your primary focus is operating and managing the delivery of those services, not really constructing the bricks and mortar within which those services might be delivered, or the corridors that are necessary to bring them to their customers. So they're quite different skill sets. They're very different skills, you know.
Now, one of the things that scandalizes many people, besides the unconscionable delay in getting this facility open, and there were arguments over whether where it was to be and the site that was chosen was ultimately the right answer for a speedy construction. Many people believe that was part of the delay problem, but also the cost, an initial cost of 650 million euro, now well over 2.5 billion euro. And that's what scandalizes people. It seems to suggest wastage and inefficiency and just a bad way of doing things.
Yeah, they're big numbers, all right. From the outside, it seems that the procurement method used was perhaps somewhat optimistic, and that when you go for a maximum price contract, you really need to have your project designed down to the carpet color almost, you know.
Yeah.
And there's very little room for change. Otherwise, you open lots of clauses in that contract. So usually when it comes to a fixed price or a maximum price contract, you've entered a deal with a contractor that this is what you're going to build without variation, and therefore they can stick to that price. Then as soon as you vary, you open a whole variety of clauses which causes the price and the time to change. And as far as I understand it, that's what happened in the Children's Hospital. And I think that the lesson learned from that is, if that's the procurement method you want to use, which sounds nice, fixed price contracts sound nice, but in reality, it needs you to have a very fixed project in mind. So the pre-development work, knowing how many doorknobs you're going to use or how many operating theatres you're going to have from the get-go, is key to the success of those contracts.
Now, you make the point that if you change things, you open the door to adjusting the price. And you say it's not just that particular door that then may be readjusted, but pretty much every aspect of the contract becomes open for negotiation again.
Well, sure. If you have to redesign part of any project in order to facilitate a change, then it's going to take time. It may impact your planning permission. It may impact the skills somebody requires on the site or in the design phase. I'm not saying that's what happened with the Children's Hospital, but that can easily happen on a fixed price contract. Perhaps there was a rush to get the project going, and maybe they sped up where they perhaps needed to slow down, which invariably causes long-term delays.
You've worked on many different infrastructure projects, and one of the things that strikes me is that any asset, whether it's a new metro line in Paris or whether it's a children's hospital in Dublin, that it has to sit within its local environment and it has to sit well. And I suspect that one of the problems with the Children's Hospital is that they just built a hospital on the site of an existing hospital, St. James, but they didn't necessarily think about all the rest of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's the case. I hope it isn't the case, but certainly master planning is one of the great skills of the French and the Finnish as well. They're pretty good at it too, where you actually take a designated zone, not just the site of the construction, but it's bringing a bit of systems thinking to the project, where you see where the impacts are going to be and you address them. And those impacts are often very positive for a surrounding neighborhood. And sometimes, as you say, you can identify critical needs, like where is the hospital staff going to live? Or do we need more public transport access? How are people going to get here quickly if it's an emergency? All of those good thought processes are part of the master plan. That's kind of that pre-development phase that we talked about earlier, in that you have the full scope and impact of the project before you go through into the procurement phase. So you can maximize the value, maximize the benefit, and also try and identify and mitigate those kind of pinch points that can happen when you bring such a big project into a neighbourhood.
Mm. Now, we shall see how it all unfolds when it finally gets open and how it'll function as a working hospital. We hope it'll function well, and we know that the medical staffs will endeavour to deliver the best possible care to their patients. But here's the rub about, you know, learning from this series of mistakes, if you like. It may well be that the state, in whatever guise, whether it's transport or another hospital, whatever it might be, will be scarred by this process with the Children's Hospital and therefore scared to embark on more of the same. And therefore, we lose that very expertise that you say is important to build up.
Well, I hope not. There seems to be great momentum from the government side in terms of creating the legislative environment for big infrastructure projects. The Metrolink project is very exciting. I agree that there is an issue of skill sets. And because we don't do this regularly and often, we are building those skills. I mean, we've never built a metro. We've never built a children's hospital. So there's a great deal of benchmarking and partnership with expert companies and contractors and designers from places where it has happened and where it has happened recently, so that Ireland gets the best of what's available, the latest in the technology and the skills and so on. And we build that skill set within the Irish ecosystem for infrastructure. And as a bigger economy now and a wiser and wealthier economy, perhaps, than the one I worked in Temple Bar for, we will be able to assure a sufficient pipeline of infrastructure projects that we can use those people on the next big project and the next big project, because they have a lot in common, big projects. Technically, that may be very different, but putting together a big project and ensuring its delivery is as successful as it can be is a very specific set of skills. It takes a certain amount of appetite for risk, as you rightly say, and also a certain confidence in the ability to identify all the stakeholders, to maximize the potential of each of these big projects for Cork, for Limerick, for Navan, wherever they're planned, so that we get awfully good at it. And there's no reason why Ireland wouldn't become a benchmark for small countries developing 21st century infrastructure, and that we will become the benchmark for future countries doing the same.
Finally, Maeve, when you're assembling a team to do a major infrastructural project, be it a motorway with a few bridges, or whether it's a children's hospital or a metro or an extension to a tram line, or indeed a novel tram line, for example, through Galway, the idea is you assemble a team and you trust their expertise in each of the areas, whether it's the quantity surveyor, the planner, the engineer, the person who's responsible for groundworks, whatever it might be. But always at the top, there's got to be somebody who says, I am in charge. I will take the blame or the credit when it all happens. That seems to be very diffuse in Ireland.
Yeah, I know. I take that point. I think it's important to that these projects are led and led well. Whoever that might be, a project director or a CEO or a person who can clearly communicate where they're at on the project, what the problems are, what the process has become, because always the process changes on big projects, and what the output is looking like. And they own that timeline, and they own the ability to communicate that to wherever it has to be, the community, the Public Accounts Committee, their political masters. I'd also advocate for good boards. I think good governance with technically competent people in the various areas that feed into a project is also really valuable. I know it was valuable in Temple Bar, and I see it in the projects in France. A good board is extremely helpful for guiding the executive team and maintaining the objectives and ensuring that as resources become finite or become stretched, that they can seek board input in order to identify what resources are necessary and when they might be necessary.
A final question really is about public accountability. I mean, do the politicians really have to be so closely involved in all of this?
I think so. I think that's the joy of a small democracy like Ireland, is that the politicians are very close to their constituents. I don't know if the decisions should always be at the most local level, because it's very hard to see why you would put up in your lovely house somewhere in the country, you would put up with a lot of construction disruption for 5 years. Or 7 years or 10 years around St. James's, I guess. And there is an issue where the national good, the public interest, must come to bear over and above individual disruption. We should absolutely, and politicians should absolutely, take count of the community who's being asked to give that little bit more than everybody else when it comes to delivering a public good like a metro station. But at the same time, one or two or three or the loudest voices in the room shouldn't be able to stop a project that's in the interests of everybody. So, yeah, I like the political involvement. I think it's important. I think it's important.
Maeve Jennings, who is head of development at Temple Bar Properties and now working far beyond that particular area, working in Tbilisi in Georgia at the moment. Maeve, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
My pleasure. Thank you, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.